As always, there's our music, which is the cue to start the Aging Well Together show. We have another super powerful show today. Sorry for those of us, we were not live last week. It was July 4th, and so I hope you all had a chance to go to the festival for the Eno, which we had been supporting and talking about on the show. But today, we are continuing our series that I didn't realize was a series, but apparently we started a series in May and June all about brain health awareness. And so we are continuing it into July. We are going to be sharing fabulously helpful brain health information. And today is all about Huntington's disease. And I am honored. We have a great panel of guests and we have an audience. I think you all win for the biggest, I'm making them giggle, the biggest group we've had in our awesome cozy studio. So maybe now is also the time that I usually like to do every show, I'll talk about my age, but it's hot in here. So middle-aged women being like, it's hot. But we have a great, we've got five people in here, three on the mics. We'll see if, we'll have fun trying to see if we can pull the other two on. But we have Erica Bublowski. Did I do that one right? Who's a social worker. She's the community outreach specialist for HD Reach. I'm just going to go on a limb, and I'm going to assume that HD stands for Huntington's disease. We have Claudia Testa, who's a physician as well as a PhD. So we got a lot of initials. She's the chief of precision medicine and neurogenetics division and a professor of neurology right down the street with the UNC Neurology Group of UNC Chapel Hill. And then we have now my returning friend, because we met recently, the woman who brought us all together, Latorius Adams, who is the family support specialist at UNC for the Huntington's disease program. And Latorius and I met recently at the Orange County Wellness Fair and got to talking, and she was like, we should come on the show. And I was like, I would love for you to come on the show and teach us about Huntington's disease. So I am super excited for all we're going to learn together. In our audience, we have Hans Nedesheim. I messed that up. Nedesheim. Yeah, I'm still messing that up. Okay, we have Hans, who's fantastic, and I had his last name right, and then I mispronounced it. Anyway, and Hans is with the research department at UNC in neurology, or UNC. Okay, he's nodding. And we have Betsy McFarlane, who's the executive director for HD Reach. So super happy to have such a lovely group here tonight. Today. I'm excited, again, for all we're going to learn together. But before we dive into our show, as always, want to give a shout-out to my friends at WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for allowing us to use this fun studio for our weekly Aging Well Together show. And as I always love to put the love and the celebration out for the Orange County Department on Aging, which sponsors the Aging Well Together show, and they're just wonderful. Please join us each week. You will know we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for Aging Well Together. You can catch us live most Thursdays from 2 to 3, or you can stream us live through WCOM's website, and that is WCOMFM.org. Or you can listen to any of our previous shows. I had someone say to me the other day, don't you have a podcast? And I was like, I have a radio show that becomes a podcast, which I think is cooler. But all of our podcasts, this is our 47th show, and you can find them all through the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is, and this is where you get a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen, which you may want anyway for the information we're going to share later on in the show. But the Orange County Department on Aging's website is orangecountync.gov/aging. And on the website, orangecountync.gov/aging, you're going to find links to our Aging Well Together radio show, as well as a host of other helpful resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina. I add that now because we have a lovely listenership. I'm learning that may hit other Orange counties around the country, but we are in Orange County, North Carolina. If you have questions about any of the resources we discuss on the shows, or if you want to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, you can either call the Department on Aging, and their general number is 919-968-2070, or feel free to email me directly at, and it's all one big smushed word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, or pull a Latorius and just start chatting with me at, or I think actually I came to you because you were at a booth, so I was like, what's going on here? Or we just meet somewhere at a health and wellness fair, at a supermarket, whatever, and we'll just start talking and I'll say, hey, come on the radio show. So would love to include folks. We are, we're kind of booked through September, October, but we have some fall shows and I can't even believe I'm saying it, but we're already starting to plan for our 2025 season. So exciting. All right. Shout out to the Carbro Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet. You heard just a moment of them for our opening music, and you will hear more from them at the end of the show. My lovely Alicia Reed is listening. We love you, Alicia. She is not joining us today because we have too many people in the studio. But make sure to stay tuned after our show at 3 o'clock is Afternoon Talk with Alicia. And so you'll be able to get her love and wisdom soon. All right, for me, as you all know, I think at this point, I am Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 53, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, and so I'm super invested in how we are all aging well together, and I have a new friend who has a presumed Huntington's disease, and so I've been learning more about it, and we'll see if that's actually a fair term that I just created, but I've been very fascinated with this disease, so I think the universe is sort of fascinating, right? As I'm learning about this disease, I meet Latorius, and now you're all on the show. So yay, and I'm excited. This is the fourth time I've interviewed a neurologist in the last month. I don't know how many more conversations I can have until I can be a pretend neurologist, but I'm super excited to have a real live one here. We have, again, we have Claudia Testa, who is from the UNC Neurology Department and does all kinds of fabulous things of words like, sexy words like neurogenetics and precision medicine. I think that sounds so fun. We have Erica Bublowski here, the social worker with the and a community outreach specialist with Huntington's Disease HD Research, and we have Latorius Adams here, the family support specialist with the UNC Huntington's Disease Program. So, and we have Hans and Betsy here, so I got to stop talking so we can get all into this, but welcome, guests.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know. All right, so we have a lot to get into, and you are phenomenal. You sent me a list of questions, and so spoiler alert, we're going to talk about early detection and diagnosis, living with Huntington's disease, the family impact, research and treatment advances, practical tips and resources, challenges and success stories. We got a lot to get into. But before we do all that, I do want you each just to be able to go around and just say a little bit about yourself. Where are you from and how did you get all up into yours and other people's brains? How's that for fun? Did I warn you that we like to kind of have fun, even with these sort of heavy, intense topics? We like to keep things a little on the light side here. So I'm looking at Dr. Testa. I'll go to you first.
Yeah, thanks. I'm really excited to be here. How did I get all up into other people's brains? Brains are just the coolest. I always wanted to be a scientist, and then I got sort of moved a little sideways into the intersection between medicine and neuroscience. Mm-hmm. When I was training as a graduate student for my PhD, I was really, really fortunate to fall in with the lab of Dr. Zan Young and Jack Penny, who worked on Huntington's disease specifically, and were part of this huge research project, the Venezuela Research Project, led by Nancy Wexler, that helped find the gene behind Huntington's disease. And they were actually the first gene hunting group, like we think about all the time now, the Human Genome Project, or, oh, these people have figured
gene
out this
hunting?
New.
That sounds so cool. I hadn't heard that.
People have found this gene, or people have found the mutation that causes this disease. You know, when that team started, it wasn't a thing. Like, they didn't have the technology or the resources. The Human Genome Project hadn't even, like, really launched. And so the idea that they would go find a community of people willing to collaborate with them that had a lot of family members impacted by mm-hmm. this inherited disorder, they would go from that to identifying the gene and the change in the gene that caused the disease was really new. And it was just so amazing mm-hmm. To meet with those family members, to talk to the scientists. I was just really hooked.
I love the connection between the clinical work and the science work, and now the whole, I'm trying to think of some other fun, like, exploration that you're just, you know, you're in the forefront of finding things. Literally, I can't get past thinking of a new, like, clearly I watch a lot of television, like, that should be like the gene hunter, you know.
Yeah, make it. Okay. I like it.
Well, I'm so glad you are here. And then, have you been in the Chapel Hill area for a while? I mean, go Tar Heels.
I only moved here pretty recently. I've been here full-time for almost exactly 2 years now.
Oh, wow. So there's so many of you. I did not stalk each of you, which is my nice way of saying research each of you. I mean, I looked into Huntington's disease and all that. But so, well, it's great to have you here, and how fun. You're already on Cool WCOM, Chapel Hill Carbo. Well, it's great to have you. And then I'm going to look at my friend Erica, and we share a person. So we've heard about each other for, gosh, a few months now. And then we finally got to meet.
It is so cool. I'm like, I feel like this is like, we get to meet face to face. On the radio,
I know,
which
our
is wild.
Late night email's like, wait, you're the Erica I've heard about. Oh my gosh. All right, so where are you from, and how did you, now I'm enjoying this question, how did you get up into people's brains?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of forced on me, but, you know, I'm actually from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Nice.
And just, you know, social work was my passion, my heart, and that's where I kind of, you know, went to school for. And I eventually got into hospice after graduate school, and that really kind of gave me an incredible perspective of life and living mm-hmm. and just healthcare in general, and what it means to, like, die with decisions, die mm-hmm. with hopeful mm-hmm. peace. And it was really moving work that I really loved.
Best people. Well, now we'll say the best people are in Huntington's disease, but in my experience, just the most caring, wonderful people are in or come out of the hospice world. I mean, if you can help someone die beautifully and die well, you can help them live beautifully and live well. So I
absolutely
love it.
I'm like, I can't talk about myself, but everybody I worked with was awesome. They were wonderful people.
Nice.
But I actually have Huntington's disease within my family. Mm-hmm. So my mom actually sought care from Dr. Mary Edmondson, who created HD Reach in 2009. Yeah. So this is kind of a full circle life moment for me. So she created HD Reach to create more resources and supports here within North Carolina, because there are some serious gaps for the Huntington's disease community. So she was very influential within my own life. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, I got to get some experience under me. I got to really kind of enjoy the hospice experience and learn. And then, you know, this role came up and became available. And I was like, well, you know, I guess I could give this a shot. And this community is, like, at the forefront of my heart, because I am part of the community. So mm-hmm. it was, it's really exciting for me. So now I get to, you know, put my brain to work and see what kind of gaps there are and work with amazing people.
Yeah.
So,
oh, and
living the dream.
It's so great that you called out Mary, Dr. Edmondson.
Dr. Edmondson.
Because I met her through Huntington Study Group many years ago. Sue's shared passion for developing new therapeutics that actually work in the way that Huntington's disease patients and families, you know, need things to work. And she told me, if you're ever looking for a job, thinking about a move, I'm gonna get you to North Carolina.
Wow.
She told me that like 10 years ago. She's like, you know, before your career's over, I'm gonna get you in North Carolina. And so she is now responsible for two of us being in Huntington's disease land in North Carolina.
I'm like, is it safe to say she's like a little puppeteer? Mm-hmm. Dr. Mary Edmondson is a psychiatrist. She's recently retired, uh-huh. but she comes from an HD family as well. So everything that she's done for her entire life has been devoted into research and resources for this community. So it's amazing to hear that too, because it's like, you know, I feel like we've all kind of been put in together by this, you know, one person.
I love that my teenager gets when it's like, I love that for you. But no, I mean, seriously, not, I'm not like, I love that. And I'm a big fan of, and I think the technical term is smushing. I love smushing our professional and our personal. It just, especially this work, which becomes a bit of a calling or a mission for, you know, however we want to put it. But when I know in my own life, you know, when the professional also kind of connects into your personal experiences, when your personal experiences connect into the professional, I think it just makes for even more meaning and love. All right, Latorius, how did you get into this world?
Well, my background is in public health and master's in health sciences.
Oh, I was going to say, you have an MS, but so I knew the others, or social work or doctor. Yeah. You're my people. You're a public. I was going to say, you have an MS. What's that? You're public health like me.
Yes, I am. And I
don't want the others to listen. You're my favorite now.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
So, let's do a discipline battle. All right, so go on.
So my background is after grad school, I worked at a local health department for mm-hmm. over 10 years in a rural county, Harnett County, mm-hmm. and I loved it. I loved it for several reasons. But there was a lot of things lacking in those areas, and healthcare access, transportation access to clinics. So I saw a position open at UNC, apply mm-hmm. for it. My connection with Dr. Edmondson is worked with her on my interview. Her and Dr. Testa interviewed me. I knew nothing about Huntington's disease.
Okay.
I knew a lot about dementia because mm-hmm. I worked with families that were caring for someone at home that had a type of dementia, but I had no idea what Huntington's disease was. So I started doing my research, and I went in the interview like I owned it, I guess, because Dr. Testa hired me. And
you did good. I was going to say.
Dr. Edmondson was beautiful, amazing. She still allows me to call her to this day when I have questions. I just enjoy helping people. Yeah. I see so many people that leave doctor's appointments and they're lost. They leave with a piece of paper and they don't know what else to do. So in my role, I'm able to help them fill that gap. I'm able to help connect them to HD Reach, Erica. And mm-hmm. so it's beautiful that me and Erica work together so closely on clinic days. So I'm glad to be here. I'm honored that Dr. Edmondson is like a star, and she and I was able to meet her and work with her, and that Dr. Testa brought me along the team. I love it. Absolutely love it.
It was easy because when we asked you about your work in Harnett County and the kind of things you do for working with really making a meaningful difference with people with aging, with people with neurodegenerative brain disorders, you have to really be unafraid mm-hmm. and open and say, we're going to have conversations about topics that are a little uncomfortable, mm-hmm. or we're going to, you know, think about what are the real barriers? Are there things that you're hesitating to discuss? And we asked you in that interview, can you think of something that you just were really proud of and you had figured out the incontinence has a huge barrier for adults, mm-hmm. you know, to get out of their house or to do things. And it's an incredibly uncomfortable conversation. Mm-hmm. But then you also figured out that diaper banks carry adult diapers mm-hmm. and condom people. And I just looked at Mary and she was like, yeah, I mean, this is what we want people to run in, who are willing to run into the fire. We're the run-in people, not the runaway people.
Right.
As soon as we find one of our people, we're like, that's it.
This is such a love fest happening right now within the UNC neurology world and also across what, I don't know if it was clear from the introductions, but we actually have in this studio right now a coming together of two organizations, at least two?
Yes.
And then, so we have HD Research and we have UNC Neurology. And HD Reach. That's right. I looked at Hans, and he gives off such research vibes. It just threw
Hans,
me, Hans. So we have
up.
HD Reach. Thank you, Betsy. Awesome. Executive directoring. But that's great. So I love that it's coming together. When I saw, I was like, oh, this is good. Because I think what I want to do is say what Huntington's disease is, not me, because I am only a pretend neurologist, so I'm probably going to turn that over to Dr. Testa, but then talk about, and then we're going to get into this, but really, how does UNC Neurology come into it, and how does HD Reach come into this? Because again, you all went right into the content, but I like to do content laying here, or context laying. So first of all, what is Huntington's disease?
So Huntington's disease is, I'll start with the short, but all technical terms and break it down.
Okay, cool.
So it's an autosomal dominant genetic disorder.
Yeah.
That's a neurodegenerative movement disorders and dementia cognitive disorder. So autosomal dominant means that it's caused by one change, a mutation or variant in one gene, the Huntington gene, and that everybody has two copies of that gene. So one from your genetic mom and one from your genetic dad. Mm-hmm. And you just need one of those copies to have the mutation to develop Huntington disease.
Got it.
And then that means that each of your genetic offspring have a 50-50 chance of inheriting that mutation and developing Huntington disease during their lifetime, or a 50-50 chance of inheriting the gene from their other genetic parent and then not developing Huntington's disease.
But they could still pass it on if they inherit the gene. They could still pass it on.
So
I mean, if they inherit the gene.
We tend to say gene is a shorthand.
Freaking out, yeah.
But really, you have two copies of the gene, and one of them has the mutation, the change that causes disease, and the other one does not.
Okay.
Okay. So so that's what autosomal dominant means.
Oh, yeah.
It means
keep going.
You
yes.
have a genetic change that you can pass on to your genetic offspring, and you only need one of the changes to cause disease.
That's the big number. That 50-50, that's a big number.
50-50 is a big number, and we'll get into that more.
Okay.
Neurodegenerative means neuro brain cells degenerative, lose them faster than regular aging. We're all losing brain cells all the time, and then replacing some of them. That's regular old aging. And then all neurodegenerative diseases, like Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, and many others, lose some of those brain cells faster than regular aging.
Okay.
And then movement disorder, that's brain level discontrol of movement. So people develop extra involuntary movements. They can really get in their way. They can develop a lot of different challenges with gait and balance, speech, like handling the motor part of speech, not thinking about language, but handling like getting words out or chewing and swallowing, that kind of area of motor control, fine motor control, like using their hands for things. So there's a huge range of motor symptoms. And then dementia cognitive, people develop changes in cognition that slowly progress over time, and they can develop different mood or psychiatric symptoms, a little more variable.
It's intense.
So it's a lot. So
I think medical. It's an intense brain disease that has both cognitive and physical attributes. How's that?
Exactly.
I'm trying to do the like easier.
And then
it's
sort
intense.
Of the last thing to think about is, you know, it's like if you're putting. So one of my patients told me the way that they try to explain it, or give people who've never heard of Huntington's disease a little bit of a hook into it, is it's like if you're putting Parkinson's disease, where you have a lot of progressive movement challenges, together with the dementia disorder like Alzheimer's disease. So you're running kind of both at the same time. And then you sprinkle in sort of variable and unpredictable levels of psychiatric symptoms. And I think that's that combination is really, really challenging, because that starts to get into the kind of symptoms that people don't like to talk about or feel like they're going to experience some kind of shame or discrimination or difficulty in getting addressed.
And I'm glad you brought up the similarities and differences with Parkinson's disease. I know as I start to meet people with Huntington's, those that of us that don't know but see involuntary movement, I think I've heard more about Parkinson's, so you just sort of assume, well, maybe that's Parkinson's, and then you find out, no, actually Huntington's is different. And so thank you for that. Do we, that for the definition of what Huntington's disease is, in terms of, I want to go into some of the things I know you wanted to talk about. Do we want to say a quick, we can do it now, about what is HD Reach and the family support? Because I realize in a lot of these questions, we'll get into that, but I think it's a good time to even describe what HD Reach is. You did a little bit, yeah. And then the family support program from the Huntington disease program. So we sort of put context laying.
Yeah, for okay. Sure.
Great.
Yeah, we were started in 2009 by Dr. Mary Edmondson and her family to create.
We love you, Mary. I don't know who you are, but apparently you're fabulous. I want to have a drink with this woman. Yeah. All right, go on.
and so it was to create resources and fill gaps in North Carolina specifically. Mm-hmm. So we are a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. We have 4 full-time employees.
I'm seeing 2 of them.
You're seeing 2 of us. There's another 2. So Brandy is actually our care navigator. So she provides care navigation, helps with resource, helps with placement, helps with, that long-term care type planning.
Okay.
We also do a lot of like meetups throughout North Carolina.
Nice.
So we meet up in like some of the hot spots that we call hotspots, which are like Durham or Charlotte. We have Asheville.
Hotspots where there, because clearly it's all hot right now physically, but there's a lot of people.
Exactly.
With this. Yeah.
So, and Wilmington, and we're in Winston-Salem. And so, but we're also adding to that. So in the future, look for more dates. But we hang out, we eat pizza, and mm-hmm. we meet at like different breweries and just different places to kind of have Ooh. More like social gathering of connecting mm-hmm. community. But we also do like virtual support groups. And we like to think of ourselves as kind of like this hub. Like, how can we get people started in asking about resources and support?
Sure.
You can call us and somebody's going to answer the phone. It's most likely going to be Brandy in her little sweet Southern accent. And you're going to be talking to us directly. And we have a video game program, we have a book club. All of this is for people who are impacted by HD mm-hmm. to help create community. And all of our services, except for we do like a confidential anonymous genetic testing. So that is like a private pay program.
Got it.
But everything else is free.
Okay. Well, so then, because I don't want to forget to do this later. Yep. If people want to join or learn more about HD Reach.
Yeah.
See, Hans is in my line of sight, and now I cannot get that word out of my head. HD Reach.
Yep.
No, I'm not saying you should move, Hans. I'm just being quirky. So how would they connect with HD Reach?
HDReach.org. You go to our website. We've got everything on our website.
Easy.
Yeah. We have a full YouTube page. We have a yearly education day. Like, I can keep going on and on. We've got a lot of stuff.
There's a lot happening, and I've heard good things behind your back, so now I'm glad that I'm, you know, hearing it now in front of me. So
yeah.
So that's a great resource. And then clearly, Latorius, you are out and about in the community. So UNC, I mean, Dr. Testa, there's research going on, there's clinical work going on, but how are you bringing that into the people's world? I'm making up terms now.
So our UNC Huntington's Disease Clinic, which is ran by Dr. Testa, Jenna Lay is our genetic counselor, myself and Hans is our research coordinator, and we also have Megan, who is a genetic counselor assistant. Mm-hmm. So we have a team, and we also have...
Oh, don't forget about Dr. Cohen,
yes,
our psychiatrist.
I was about to say, Dr. Cohen.
He's at home taking care of his new baby.
Yes, he is
so
now.
We tend to forget about
Dr.
him.
Cohen. We're very happy. I don't know you either, but congratulations.
Yes.
Hope you're listening with your new baby. We'll put him or her to sleep.
Okay. Yes, so we have an entire team. So our goal is we want to provide compassionate, patient, and family-centered care for people impacted by Huntington's disease through the following services.
Okay.
Of course, diagnostic consultations with Dr. Testa, genetic counseling, and that's done through Jenna Lay, and self-care recommendation and support resources for caregivers, which comes through me. So a lot of times I'll go into the visit with Dr. Testa and meet with the family. And what's important for me is, depending on what they're there for, I want to help them meet the needs after they leave, whether it's applying for disability, whether it's getting connected with HD Reach for support groups, going to education day, going to meetups, so that they know this is a rare disease, but there is an entire community and I can connect you with them. So Erica and I are like,
you're connected.
We are very connected. Awesome.
They are physically next to each other right now.
Yes. Like, we have people that drive at least 3 hours one way for an appointment.
Wow.
In rural areas of North Carolina. And HD Reach graciously helps at times, whether it be a gas card or something, that way they can get to their appointment, because a lot of people miss appointments, whether it's for insurance reasons or monetary reasons. And I'm also able to help connect them with what UNC has in place through their charity care program that could help offset the cost. So I'm there to make sure you can come to your appointment safely. Mm-hmm. If there's an issue preventing you from coming, how I can help you set up telehealth, just whatever they need from me, I'm willing to go.
You're their person.
Yeah. I'm their
person. Everyone needs a person. I love that.
Yeah.
And then I also love, because UNC, right, we're here in Chapel Hill. There's other UNCs, but because HD Reach has literally and figuratively reach all over the state, that there may be another, at least a social group or something even closer. So it might be that Winston-Salem or Charlotte or Asheville.
And we collaborate with everybody. So I'm at the clinic with them on their HD clinic days, which is amazing. So I get to meet some people that I've talked to on by phone, like by face, which is, you can't get any better than that.
And the little I know, and from the description that Dr. Testa, I mean, this is an intense disorder or disease.
People need a lot.
I would think they need a tremendous amount of tangible support, but also a tremendous amount of emotional support. Mm-hmm. And you're going to say something?
I think, actually, to your point, there's, I think, two things that have been really powerful about having our two groups work so closely together. One is, there's a lot of intense topics to get into, whether that's how people are starting to envision building their family, given that they know that this is part of something going on in their family genetically. How are they going to build their family of other humans? Are they going to build a family of other creatures that aren't humans? Like, what kind of choices? And sometimes what they need is to talk to a genetic counselor. Sometimes what they need is to talk to the people in HD Reach who can connect them with other families, and that's the better choice for them. Like, we want to empower people to get into these conversations that can take a lot of energy and support to do. And to Latoris's point, to work together to make sure whatever those barriers are. The other thing is, there's a lot of people that we're not in the business of saying the only way you're going to get good care is if you drive 3 to 4 hours one way to come see us. Mm-hmm. We're just super not into that. And so whether it's saying, oh, there's somebody with great experience that HD Reach has identified who's really close to your home, or, oh, if you could just sit down, with your spouse and walk them through how to set up a telehealth video visit, then the next time the link comes through, you can do that. Or we're partnering with HD Reach to identify collaborative clinics, satellite clinics around the state. One's at a shout out to UNC Party, General Neurology. Dr. Joel Callahan is one of the several outstanding general neurologists there. But they have a in-clinic video setup so that the families near them in rural western North Carolina that don't have adequate internet or cell coverage to sustain a video telehealth visit in their homes can go to the clinic where they know those nurses, they know those physicians. There's some comfort level there, and do their consult video visit with the genetic counselor or whatever it is, with consult video visit with me in the clinic so that they don't have to do that travel.
Go
right?
so far away.
So identifying those collaborators mm-hmm. is really a shared piece of work that I'm really excited about.
Well, this is great. If we have time, I'd like to end our discussion sometimes with this issue of hope and what kind of gives people a sense of positivity, and maybe we still do, but I'm already midway into it. This gives me hope and makes me feel good that, and even for the folks that I know that are living with this, that there's this sort of great collaboration, this academic, medical, nonprofit, that there's so many of you working together to provide really good quality of life. And I hadn't even, because I'm thinking about it more as those living with it, I hadn't even considered the genetic counseling mm-hmm. component of when yeah. you're creating your family and thinking about that whole, which actually is a good lead-in to the questions that you brought to me, which is this issue of early detection and diagnosis. And we covered a lot of information, but kind of working through some of those things that I know you wanted to share, especially for folks, I mean, are there people who don't know that it's in their family? And so going into these, like, what are the early signs and symptoms, and how do people recognize that something might be different for them, that they should get checked out? Which of you wants to take that one? They're always going to defer to the doctor, but Erica seems ready to go.
Like the doctor.
I could. It is. I kind of really want to touch on, like, how genetic illness kind of also has been a taboo topic.
Oh, go for yeah. it.
You know, it's going to lead into it. It's like,
I'm with you.
It's there's a strong history of, like, taboo, like, HD has been, very commonly taboo within a lot of families. Genetic illness in general. You have genetic discrimination.
Did not know that. Okay, yeah,
historically, like, there's been, and I mean, even today, like, there's some protections, but there's, you know, if you have a genetic illness within your family, it could be a lot more difficult to get life insurance or short-term, long-term disability.
I was like, why is it taboo? There you go. You're hitting it. Yeah.
Well, and people might have been embarrassed by the behaviors or the experiences okay. with somebody with HD or within their family, or the fact that that is genetic and could pass down to a child. So there's a lot of, like, complexities there that come with HD.
Okay.
So our role has been to really, like, how do we find people, how do we bring them in, and how do we create a safe environment, how do we create safe collaborations, and that's kind of like where we all kind of fit in, where it's, you know, we're our own entity that has a HIPAA compliant system that people can talk to us mm-hmm. but it's also when they're ready to, you know, talk to UNC, when they're ready to connect with, like, Party Clinic, and, you know, we are building this network to hopefully build this safe network that people feel comfortable to kind of come forward and ask these questions, have these discussions, and open up that communication that they probably never had growing up.
Interesting. And I do wonder if, as there's more general understanding and acceptance in an entry of dementia in general, mm-hmm. yeah. whether that will yeah. trickle down, as well as kids these days. I mean, everyone's, not everyone, but neurodivergent, they're really comfortable talking yes. about their different ways that their brains work, that learning. And I'm finding with lots of folks around that there's just a lot more comfort about talking about it. So yeah. clearly that's an early sign of, right, if you know it's in your family. What are other sort of early signs and symptoms?
So main areas are movement, so extra movements. Chorea is from the Greek word to dance, because these are often very flowy movements or movements that people...
Oh, like choreography.
Mm-hmm.
This is just teach Heather new
exactly.
things. Do I get a point for that?
Yeah. So okay, people often it. Will incorporate little versions of the movements into just, I meant to shift my position in my chair, sure, why mm-hmm. not? So people may notice that more and more. And we've found that sometimes people just are like, oh, well, that person's drunk, or oh, that person's moving strangely. Not everyone with Huntington's disease develops these extra movements, mm-hmm. but it is relatively common in Huntington's disease, and it's relatively uncommon in everything else.
Yeah, and like me, I'm just like fidgeting because I'm so short, my feet don't touch the ground, and they see me moving in my chair.
And you think, oh no.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes families don't come forward with those movements because either they're dismissed, or they feel like, okay, I'm looking up stuff about these movements, but it doesn't look like my family. I was really, really fortunate to do my movement disorders fellowship, and then my first academic job at Emory University in Atlanta. They have the first Huntington's Disease Society of America Center of Excellence there. And they had really worked very, very hard. They were in Atlanta to make really good, strong, healthy connections with all different communities within the Atlanta area. Black, white, brown, straight, queer, what have you. They really had their bases covered, and I think sometimes now we meet families, especially families who don't identify as white, and they're just like, oh, this is something that we were told whatever, or we went into our doctor and they're like, well, Latouris met a family that that is wondering, you know, if this is something they should be worried about, but sometimes those movements as an early sign, either care providers or family members tend to damp them down.
Do they think it was like more fidgeting or autism or Parkinson's, I would think, would go first? I mean,
yeah, and the way the family described it, it used to be called St. Vitus dance.
Oh.
But when she was describing it, I'm like, this sounds like Huntington's disease. So I immediately called Dr. Testa afterwards, and I'm like, I met a family, and they said this has been in their generation. And recently, and Erica talked about it too, we met with a lady who wrote a book, We Exist. Her name is Tania Allen. Mm-hmm. And her story is remarkable. We bought a book for you to read.
Thank you.
And she is an African-American woman who has Huntington's disease. And Erica got her permission to speak about this today.
So I think that's people put labels on these movements and then tend to dismiss them because of the taboo of it being a genetic disease,
right,
or not seeking like a more formal diagnosis label for those movements. So they're out there. And then the other thing I think that really keeps people from diagnosis is psychiatric symptoms. There can be so many other things, but then there's also so much emotion and so much in our society that throws up barriers to people getting diagnosed and seeking treatment for psychiatric symptoms. I'm on the side of educating the providers. Just got another message today from a psychiatric provider who said, we have this person and they have these unusual psychiatric symptoms. We're not succeeding in our workup otherwise. And then they started mentioning things in their family history. We were wondering, you know, if you could help us figure out if this is a Huntington's disease diagnosis. And I used to not hear that at all from the psychiatric side.
Okay.
People just wouldn't contact me from that side. So I think the stigma about inherited disease, the stigma about psychiatric disease, and then the assumptions of, are you quote unquote the right person, the right kind of person to have this diagnosis? All three of those things really hold people back.
So I'll, because I know we have a lot to discuss, and we've hit on a bunch of it. So clearly there's different signs that will bring you, whether it's physical or cognitive, that either themselves or their family or their providers. And then how do you actually diagnose it? Clearly there's genetic testing, but what is that I'm just trying to think, because there's a question about genetic testing and how does a doctor typically diagnose Huntington's. I didn't know if you want to address that quickly, and then we'll kind of go into the issues of living with it.
You know, I'd love to address that quickly and then get the other two speakers' guest perspectives on a couple of issues there. So short answer. So there's a genetic diagnosis and a clinical diagnosis. So from the moment, you know, you exist, you have that copy of that gene. You have your genes. So from, you know, ground zero, you have that mutation that eventually, maybe decades and decades after you're born, is going to eventually cause symptoms on the outside. So for a clinical diagnosis, we'd say evaluate with a neurologist, sometimes also with a psychiatrist, sometimes with a neuropsychologist, cognitive specialist, to really understand your range of signs and symptoms and say, okay, we really think that Huntington's disease is the explanation for these symptoms. That's the clinical diagnosis. The genetic diagnosis is talking with the genetic counselor, and so you understand what kind of testing is and understand the information about your own genes, and then putting that genetic test result together, that information together with a clinical diagnosis. But many people seek their to know their genetic status long, long before they have any symptoms on the outside. And that's the thing that I want you guys to
And typically it's either a blood, you know, blood draw or saliva kit testing now that they can do. So that's what we do. But we actually have, like, some people choose to have that, where I talked about the, you know, kind of taboo of it, to choose to have an anonymous test where they kind of test under a falsified name.
Oh, like,
so that it's not directly linked to their...
Sorry, back in the day with HIV. Sorry, clearly I grew up in the 80s.
The 80s are back in a big way,
So interesting.
So it allows that person to have a lot more control in who they're telling and, you know, kind of keeping it out of their medical folder so that doesn't have any connection to them.
I was wondering before when you said anonymous testing, I was like, why is that so helpful? Okay, it, so
and it's
people
and
do
it's,
that.
But it's not a route to, like, okay, I tested anonymously, now I know I'm gene positive, now I need to sign up for insurances, because that's insurance fraud. But we, like, we talk about these conversations ahead of time, like, listen, this is a way to, like, make sure you have control, but we need to also get some things in place before you do any type of testing whatsoever.
Got it.
Yeah, from the clinical side, we're usually saying, before you try to figure out if you want to do anonymous testing or not, let's just have you talk with our genetic counselor. Let's have you talk with Jenna, because anybody can talk and just get information, right? That doesn't go into your, that's not going to result.
And I want to acknowledge, too, that testing positive and testing negative can also both have very, very harm, like, very difficult reactions from the individual.
Okay.
So testing negative does not always provide this relief. And a lot of times...
Because then it doesn't explain why these other things are happening.
Well,
you can imagine survivor guilt,
that
for
too.
Example, or choices that you've made in your past life, like, live fast, you know, because it doesn't matter.
Especially,
if you... Or didn't have children because I assumed...
You made life...
Exactly.
Yeah. And then you also... A lot of times somebody who's gene negative, like, they watch their other family members. They might have siblings. They might
There's
have other aunts and uncles, grandparents. I mean, and they... sometimes go into the caregiver role where they are, like, a primary caregiver, you know, and they're the only one, or they're, you know, one of a small amount. So there's, it's very complex.
So,
and isn't
so again, a plug for genetic counseling. I think that's one of the big things that families and patients, but also their partner clinics and satellite clinics are really happy to get access to. Jenna's amazing. And talking with a genetic counselor before deciding to test, particularly if you're doing what we call predictive testing, so you just want to know your genetic status. You have no symptoms, but you want to understand your own genetic information. Talking to someone both before, then if you decide to go forward with the testing, then meeting again with a genetic counselor to go over the results is super, super important.
Yeah, there's, I'm already, because I hate to say this, we have less than 10 minutes left, and I'm already thinking, okay, there's a whole other show I want to do on just the psychological issues around and emotional issues around genetic testing. I don't think we'll be able to really dive into research, but what I want to talk about is some of the more practical, in the sense that so people have either through some combination of genetic and clinical diagnoses that they learn they have Huntington's disease, and then what? You know, what are the practical tips of, like, living with Huntington's disease? Just, I know because you wanted to talk about that when I look at the questions, but also in how does your family member? So what next? I think Latorious, like, they get it, and then you're their person. do you treat it medically? Do you treat it emotionally? Like, how do you treat it?
All of the above.
All of the above. Okay. So my
threw that. That was a softball, I guess.
So on my end, I assist treating it emotionally, as far as being their person, like you said. So when individuals get a diagnosis or come in the clinic, I have information for them.
Victorious is holding a blue bag right now. They get a goodie bag.
This is a gift bag for you.
Oh, I get
actually. And so I like to give them a gift when they leave, if there's something I can, because you drove this far, you're dealing with this diagnosis. And I also want to add, too, it's important to know that this isn't just an older disease. We have people getting diagnosed very young, in their 20s and up. So you have to think this is a life changer.
I did a little bit of research a few weeks ago, and I did see that there's a lot in their 30s. Right? Yes. Isn't like the big key time like 35 to 55 or something?
I've worked with kids down to the age of 3 to 5. About 10% of Huntington's disease diagnoses are in kids, so under 18. But that means 90% are adults. And we see the whole age spectrum, 20s, 30s, but also I've diagnosed people in their 70s, 80s. Yeah. So I think we can do very, very well treating the extra movements. We can do very, very well treating psychiatric symptoms, really.
Like treating with medication?
Mm-hmm, treating with medication. There's really great data for what we call rehab services, physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, incredibly effective. At the top of the show, you talked about hospice care. Mm-hmm. We intersect a lot as people become more affected with palliative care. Mm-hmm. This is not an end-of-life care thing. It's organizing care principles around the present day and comfort. It's just a different way of thinking of the right care plan for the person, not an end-of-life care plan. So I'm working on the medical side to say these medications could be helpful. These non-medication interventions could be helpful. My colleague over here in palliative at this point could be helpful. I think what I really rely on Latorius for, as well as on help from HT Reach for, is uncovering things that we could help with that I'm not thinking about asking. Like if somebody is agitated or, you know, in really struggling with their anxiety, maybe hooking them up. Latorius, you found the Dementia Alliance would make a CD of music.
Music and memory.
That then you don't have to just throw pills at somebody who's anxious or agitated. You have a completely different way of making their day better. So I rely on these guys of finding those things that are really getting in the person's way day to day and coming up with these individualized solutions for them.
Do you sort of marry it with other proven supports for people with other cognitive changes
and
physical? So you just sort of, it sounds like each person gets their own unique
care
support.
And it definitely with the age range. And then we also have, we have a large incarcerated population. So that's a whole nother topic.
That's a whole
that needs
topic.
Help. So we're not just dealing with certain age groups. So we are really meeting people where they are and providing them what they need individually.
But if anybody's listening to this, like, start early, start having conversations, connect the caregiver, like, as a care partner or family members, like, you got as friends, like, connect, learn, educate yourself, and also get supports for yourself. You're going to need a team. You're going to need people involved.
And I'm so glad you put that out there, because it's funny, I'm looking at you at all these questions, and I think we've actually touched on a lot of them that we didn't go into the research as much. But you know, given we have 2 minutes left, in terms of those practical tips, in terms of your, hey, for anyone who's listening, you know, you each have about a minute to kind of, why don't we go around? Like, what do you wish people knew more of, or what do you want your folks to know about this disease and how to get support? Or whatever it is that you wanted to share, that if you hadn't had a chance to, there's like 4 questions in that.
So to me, I would want people to advocate for themselves. If something is wrong, make sure you talk about it. If you don't get an answer from that provider, keep going. Rare diseases, a lot of people don't know. So again, like Erica say, talk about it. When you come to your appointments, make the most of your appointments. Get your questions asked. After the fact, if they're like, don't be ashamed, because this is your care. So speak up for yourself and definitely form a team or have a village.
I love that. Yeah. Okay. Erica?
And we have a clinic form that actually helps you kind of identify a lot of questions to ask or look for when you go to a clinic. So honestly, come to our website, like hdreach.org, reach out to us, take a look at our YouTube library. We've got we touch on addiction, sex. We talk about long-term care, Medicaid. We have a lot of videos that are incredible, but also like reach out to us, because we can also help tailor something specific to you. But we can also get you in touch with UNC. We can get you in touch with wherever you're at. So even though we're a North Carolina base, you can call us. We'll still connect your family members with their resources that are local to them.
And I think it's important to highlight, because it's how we met. You don't have to have an official, if I understand it, you don't have to have an official diagnosis of Huntington's disease, because the person that I knew had a diagnosis of chorea, you know, and that was in it, because I actually asked, how did you get connected to HD Research if you don't know that that's, do you have, and if the person has some of the symptoms, is that?
Sometimes it's just talking it out and going, okay, how can we talk this out and like help you eventually get comfortable with making the best decision for yourself.
Got it.
And it might be connecting them with a clinic just to, you know, and you see a neurologist, and it might not be HD, but maybe it's having that conversation and just spending that time.
All right. And to our neurologist, Dr. Testa, your last words with this.
So research, we love connecting people with research, clinical trials. You don't have to have a diagnosis of Huntington's disease. We can help you sort out if Huntington's disease or a different neurogenetic disorder, different disorders, what's going on and what's a good fit for for a clinical trial, research participation. But my main pragmatic thing is, I think people are scared of diagnoses like this because they feel like it's a hopeless diagnosis. And I think I want people to know that there's stuff that you can do immediately today to take care of your brain that are powerful, that are effective, that we can all be doing to take care of our brains. And people with neurodegenerative disease like this one, those little powerful everyday things that everyone can do now are even more impactful. And then finally, we all should be planning. We're all bad at this. Nobody likes to sit down with their family and talk about end-of-life choices or their finances or all this stuff that we've been taught to run away from. But planning is empowerment, and communication is empowerment. So we're here to tell you that there's stuff you can do like right now today to help your brain, yourself, and your family.
Oh my gosh, that was wonderful. I love that. Planning is empowerment. Well, I cannot thank you enough. Thank you to the team from UNC Neurology. Thank you to the team from HD Reach. For everyone, plan for your empowerment. Take care of your brains. I'm thinking of all these great things that we shared. I cannot thank you all enough. And of course, I have to thank WCOM, Chapel Hill Carrboro for us. I have to thank the Orange County Department on Aging. And thank you, listeners. And we look forward to sharing more information. Take care.
Thank you.